Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. This is another edition of the Portland Pilot Show. We do this show every Monday night at 10 p.m. Pacific time, and we're glad you're here with us. Or if you're listening to the podcast, the same thing goes for that. We're just glad that you're listening. And by the way, can't listen live. You can listen to the podcast of this show at any time. You go to Blog Talk Radio, www.blogtalkradio, and then punch in the Portland Pilot Show, and it'll come right up, and you can listen if it's a more convenient time for you to listen. By the way, I am Gregory Crawford. I host the show each week. You can follow me on Twitter at WC Hoops or at www.gregorycrawfordsports.wordpress.com, where I didn't exactly predict a win over BYU, but I knew after Thursday night the Pilots were going to come back with vengeance. But I am predicting that the Pilots will beat Gonzaga at home by 5 points on February 11th, and I'm sticking to that. The real star of this show is Jason Breaux. He is the Associate Athletic Director at University of Portland, and I always say I think it's so cool that he's also a graduate of University of Portland. Jason, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. It was a fun weekend, so we had a good coach's show tonight with Coach Rev, and the team's back on track, and hopefully they can keep the momentum going.
Jason, you know basketball as well as anybody that I talk with. Quotes, was that a must-win on Saturday?
Yeah, coaches don't like to kind of go down that road about must-wins or anything, but the reality is, and even Coach admitted this a little bit, that was a game, you know, he went as far as saying it was a must-play-well game. And if they played the way if the Pilots played the way that they should play, played with energy, effort, execution, and everything, and they lost, he would have been okay with it. But to do that, come out with a win after, you know, one of the lows of the season against the worst team in the conference on Thursday on your home court, to be able to bounce back in front of a capacity crowd at the Child Center and play good basketball and pull out the win and kind of get the season back on track. I think that was one where they needed to play well, and to get the win was crucial. And I think, you know, hopefully that can translate to some good road success. Because right now they're right in the thick of things, tied for fifth place in the WCC standings.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit about that road trip coming up. And, of course, the women will be at home this week, and I will be out there. And I was going to ask you about the game with BYU. Of course, we'll throw away the game against San Diego. That was, that was bad. But, you know, the BYU win, it was a unique game, Jason. It kind of started like both teams were playing in quicksand. Then it went to some sloppy play. Then it went to some unbelievable play, passing on both teams. Then it went to shooting. Then it went to who's got the will to win.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think these are some of the most fun games that we've witnessed over the last 5 years or so is Portland BYU, and that goes back to that triple overtime game a couple of years ago. But BYU plays an entertaining brand of basketball. Sometimes it's not the most sometimes it's not the most conducive to getting the most wins necessarily, but it's very entertaining. They play up and down. Sometimes they forget to play defense. When they do play defense, they're really good because they're always good offensive teams. But what happens is when you get a couple teams like BYU and Portland this year, which is Portland is also a very good and dangerous offensive team most of the time, sometimes when the offense is going good, as you mentioned, it can be really entertaining. And there was a few three-minute spurts where it was just, you know, old-school mid-'80s NBA basketball where everyone's going hitting shots and running up and down, and it's really entertaining. But sometimes when you're perimeter-oriented, like both of those teams are in terms of scoring, sometimes, to your point about getting stuck in the sand a little bit, if some shots aren't falling like they weren't at the beginning for either team, it can be a little slow and laborious. But both teams found their groove. Portland did early, and then BYU makes a big run at the end of the half. You think maybe Portland loses all the momentum, and then, you know, after a steal and three-pointer by Chase Fisher, it looked like, you know, with about 8 minutes to go, I thought, oh, man, that could be a turning point in the game. But credit the Pilots. DeMarcus Tyson, who was great all night, hit a big corner three-pointer that cut the lead to two, and Bryce Presley and Alec Wintering, who've been there all year long just doing and leading this team, hit a couple big threes, and Portland was able to hold on, which is something they quite frankly haven't been able to do in close games this year. You know, their record is 9-11, but we've talked about it before. There's four wins that have been left on the table where the Pilots just didn't play well at the end of the game.
I love Tyson as a player, Jason. I've loved him since I first saw him on the court this year. But, you know, at times, and he's played some very good basketball, but I've always felt there's breakout games when you win against a big-time team. To me, he had a breakout game on Saturday. I can't say it any differently. It's my opinion, but I really believe that.
Yeah, undoubtedly. And, you know, he played 28 minutes, which was season high for him. And he earned those minutes. And everyone's going to look at the 21 points and the 5 3-pointers. And, you know, his offensive game was good. He can shoot the ball. And, you know, he's a very good streak shooter. When he gets it going, you know, he can hit three or four in a row in a hurry. And he's done that in both his freshman year and this year's sophomore year. The thing that impressed me from his offensive game was, he put the ball on the deck a couple times. That's how he got going. He, you know, three dribble, step back, three-pointer got him going, and then he had two runners in the first half. You know, that shot we haven't seen from him very much lately, but if he can add and continue to be a better ball handler, not turn the ball over, sometimes he gets a little loose with the ball when he puts it on the deck, but not in that environment against a team that likes to take it from you. He went right at him, hit a couple runners, and then he started getting all kinds of confidence. And then you know he's going to hit threes if he gets them, but he had a couple big shots in the second half. And I think Coach Rivino and I were talking about it earlier, the most important thing for him in terms of earning more minutes and developing consistency, he's one of the best rebounding guards the Pilots have, and rebounding is a key for this team, and everyone needs to do it. And his defense, which, you know, last year was a liability, he was guarding Kyle Collinsworth and did a great job on him for a majority of that game. And if he can do that and hold his own at the defensive end or do better than holding his own at the defensive end, there's no reason he's not going to get more minutes.
Yeah, very, very good analysis there per usual. Jason, I want to just ask you a quick comment, or you can make it a long comment. When BYU comes to town, to me it's a better show than Gonzaga. I mean, they got people coming out of the Zoo radio. They got trainers. They got strength people. They got assistant coaches. I mean, they got fans that show up early. It's glamorous. But you know what? They're also always very beatable.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I don't think it can be frustrating sometimes for fans when all of a sudden the visiting team brings a big crowd in, and we've dealt with that with Gonzaga in the past. And I think conditioned our University of Portland fans to take some pride in those Gonzaga games and get everyone out there and buy some extra tickets and bring a friend and pack it with purple. And, you know, what used to be sometimes 75-80% Gonzaga fans, now back to about 50%. And I think BYU is starting to gain that as well. You know, there's a strong LDS Mormon following. Wherever they go, they're always well-attended games. And quite frankly, they take over a lot of arenas in the WCC when BYU comes to town, and no different at the Child Center. And we knew on a Saturday afternoon there was going to be a very large BYU contingent coming out. Actually, I was surprised with how many Pilot fans there were and how loud and into the game they were. Great student section, great season ticket holder fan base, a lot of purple in the lower level, and I thought that resonated well. You know, I think the common talking point among the media was, so BYU filled the place, and there was a lot of BYU fans in the upper decks, undoubtedly, but there was also a lot of Portland Pilot fans there, and when you go back and watch and listen to the game and everything, it wasn't overwhelming BYU. It was a great college basketball environment that was just a lot of fun to watch and witness.
All right, Jason, let's go to our basketball bag. I've got the questions piling up for you. You're very popular. And these are some unique questions this week, but I know you can handle them. The first question comes from Jack. He says, class of 1969, Portland Pilots, and I love it still. So very good for you, Jack. I like people that are loyal to their schools. But he says, he asks a question, he's kind of funny. He says, bear with me, not a California Bears, but he wants to throw this idea out to you, Jason, and you can comment on it. He says about every fifth year, he'd like to see the league, since it's so prominent, change travel partners for 1 year. It's a novel concept. I don't know whether it's going to happen, but it's food for thought.
Interesting, yeah. The problem with that is it comes down to financial burdens there. You know, the travel partners are regional partners. So, you know, the two Northwest teams, when, you know, for instance, if San Diego is going to go to Portland and Gonzaga, that's a much easier trip than if, say, Portland was travel partners with San Francisco. Then you're doing a one-day turnaround and flying to the Bay Area or L.A. versus, you know, that short one-hour trip from Portland to Gonzaga. From a financial perspective, you know, and the responsibility the athletic directors and athletic departments need to show to their universities within our conference, having regionalized travel partners makes a lot of sense. From a competitive standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. Either way, you're still going to play everybody twice in some capacity. I understand where he's coming from in terms of just the mixing it up. And quite frankly, next year there will be some opportunities to mix it up, not necessarily with travel partners, but having to squeeze some multiple games into a, you know, maybe two or three games into a one-week period as we go back to a post-Christmas break. So there'll be opportunities to see different teams and mixing up travel partners more so than just your straight two-for-two.
And just briefly, without spilling all the beans, we want a few surprises. How's that going to work when you say that? Does that mean that there might be a Tuesday night game or a Monday night game or something along those lines?
Potentially there could. But more importantly, a lot of times, you know, when we host Gonzaga, for instance, and we go to Gonzaga, a lot of times those are open weekends or there's just one game when you play your travel partner. A week, they're going to jam in a second game within those 2 weeks to condense the schedule. So now, you know, when we play Gonzaga in February, we play them Thursday and we have nothing on Saturday. Well, instead, we will be playing somebody else on that Saturday instead of just having an open weekend. So they're condensing the schedule down, cutting it a week off, and then jamming an extra game into that travel partner one game weeks going forward.
Very good. Makes sense. Okay, the second question tonight comes from Mary. Mary lives in Canby, Oregon. She says, I very seldom miss a pilot game. And she asked a question about the uniforms, Jason, which actually is a good one. She says, can the pilots determine when they're at home what colors are used by themselves, thus dictating the colors of the other team? And I think we understand what she means. Could the pilots, you know, go to a black or purple and then the other team might have to wear their whites or whatever? How is that determined? It's a good question.
Yeah, it is. And that is the general baseline is home team is going to be in their white uniforms, white home uniforms. Visiting team will be in a darker colored uniform. That you can change that. And for instance, there's been times when we've had, you know, a purple specific game, or you know, we want to do a black specific uniform unveiling at home, you know, a night when we do, you know, give away black t-shirts and want to wear our new black uniforms and everything. And in those situations, we will contact the visiting team, let them know, ask if they can wear, you know, their a light color instead of their darks, and then basically go through the conference and the officials just so that they're aware of it. I believe in the past when we played Portland State, we've wanted to wear purple on our home court and they wear green. And, you know, just getting the thumbs up from the official is pretty much what you just need to do in advance. So it's not outlawed, but the general norm is to wear white when you're at home unless you're doing a special recognition or honor or reason to have a colored jersey.
And the third question tonight actually is a comment, Jason. It comes from Louise, and she wants to compliment the staff at the Child Center. And she also points out the guys that have been working pretty consistently in the concession stand that is opposite the benches. She says they're so friendly and funny and do a really good job. I just want to compliment some behind-the-scenes people. So good for you.
That's very appreciative. You know, we have a great working staff of third-party contractors and even some students. Most of the concession workers are students, and they've done a nice job. We've added some things. One of the things that we talked about when we debriefed today about Saturday, you know, with a game that had a near capacity, well, a sellout crowd, but, you know, with a large number of people, I thought, you know, comparing that to previous sellout type games relative to Gonzaga, I thought the arena flow and the management was as good as it's been. It's Child Center is beautiful. It's a wonderful facility, but sometimes infrastructurally it's a little bit behind the game. And so when you get more than 4,000 people in there, it can be difficult to manage flow of traffic, concessions, you know, ushers and everything. It can become a little condensed, but I thought that was about as good as it's been handled and managed from our staff and concessions and ticket takers and ushers perspective, you know, since I've been around the program for 20 years.
Great, great comment there. I want to ask you a quick question, Jason, kind of off the subject of on-the-court basketball, but after the game. As you know, when I was working for Comcast Sportsnet, I wrote quite a few interesting and a lot of people would say controversial topics. And for years I've been bringing up do away with the post-game handshake. Of course, we had another big incident over the weekend where several players were injured, Iona and Monmouth, on the post-game handshake. I know a lot of people don't like it when I bring it up because they think it's anti-sportsmanship. My question is, when something like that happens, does the WCC take note and kind of send something out that this happened, or do they think you've got the big boy pants on and don't have to worry about it?
Didn't get anything from the WCC on it. A lot of times institutions will do it, or if something rises to that level, it becomes a talking point, or coaches will have discussions. And in our game specifically, you know, there was a lot of energy, obviously, in a close emotional game coming off a tough loss. And as we talked about, a big win for Portland, the crowd and the students charged the court. And, you know, I think Coach Reveno did a nice job, and he talked about it of being very – so, you know, when he was shaking hands with the coaching staff of BYU and the players, just, you know, the pilots were celebrating with the students, and I think Gabe Taylor was one of the few guys that came over and acknowledged them. But Coach was very gracious in terms of them accepting it and saying, you know, don't worry about sticking around to shake hands, feel free to go. And, you know, that's something that I think Coach Reveno and our program has earned the respect of the other WCC members, and that's not something that's going to be an issue. It's an interesting point that you bring up about, you know, doing away with the handshake line. Sometimes it's great. Rarely does an instance like with Monmouth and Iona take place. And I'm not opposed in terms of heated rivalries or big-time games if the teams go to their locker rooms instead of putting themselves in position to blow up. That's not always a bad thing.
Yeah, I concur with you. I would, you didn't say it like I do, but I just do away with it. There's already been 11 incidents this year in high school and college combined on the post-game handshake. We're not even done with the season, so enough of that baloney. Shake hands before the game, even exchange gifts if you want, but after the game, you go your separate ways. That's my feeling, and I'm sticking with it. Jason, the women are playing much better. They're on the verge of playing really well, and I think nail a weekend sweep.
I hope so. I mean, they're playing hard, and you hope a win's coming for them. They've played, a couple weeks ago, Gonzaga, really tough. They're a young team, like we've talked about. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting is for the first time in probably since the mid-90s, I think, in terms of WCC basketball, the women's league is stronger than the men's league. and there were some down years in the, early 2000s for women's basketball, one bid league and everything. The addition of BYU and Pacific in the last few years, both really good women's basketball programs. San Diego's taken it to a new level. Gonzaga is at a higher level of success in the last 10 years in women's basketball than men's basketball in terms of deep tournament runs. And then, like we've talked about, you've got some good programs in the Bay Area now. St. Mary's has been a consistent NIT-caliber program over the last few years, and now San Francisco and Santa Clara are upstarts and putting up big, impressive records. So if Portland does get a win, it's not going to be a gimme win because there's not a lot of bad teams. There's not any bad teams in the WCC this year. So that becomes challenging, and for a young team that's growing and developing. But at the same time, we saw it with volleyball this year. Once you develop and can kind of break through in a really good league, sometimes the ball can start rolling downhill and it can be really successful. Once you know you can beat some of the elite teams, you know, in the conference and the nation, that gives you a lot of confidence, and it really lets the program take its next step.
Yeah, and the women have playing at home this weekend. So I always say weekend, but Thursday, Saturday, afternoon game. I love afternoon games. I think 1 p.m. against St. Mary's.
And that will be a televised weekend game. Yeah, that 1 p.m. St. Mary's game will be televised live on Comcast Sportsnet with our television crew, our internal crew producing and directing that. And the fun thing about that is afterwards, our women's basketball staff will be doing a mother-daughter coaches clinic on the court right afterwards, free clinic for mothers and daughters, and get out on the court and have some fun. I know they have about 20 people signed up, or 20 tandems signed up, and anybody else listening want to go and get out on the trial center and get a quick lesson with your mother and daughter together, it's a great opportunity.
That is really cool. And speaking of getting better, obviously it was a great confidence builder to beat BYU for the men. Now they go on the road. Nothing's ever easy in the West Coast Conference going to this Thursday and Saturday's games with a lot more confidence than if they would have been defeated by BYU. That would have continued a losing streak and would not have been good.
Yeah, you know, beating a team that just beat Gonzaga on the road and kind of had their sights set on a WCC championship, that's a great confidence builder. And now a big road game, as we've known, Portland has struggled on the road this year and previous years, even when they've had good teams. It's tough in WCC road play. Now they're going to a team, Pacific, that's won three out of their last, you know, five games, has put up some impressive home results here recently, and has gotten some players back from being held out. They're obviously going through a turbulent time with, you know, putting themselves on postseason restrictions and having head coach Ron Verlin, removed from the team temporarily. Mike Burns has taken over, but sometimes, like a wounded dog, those are the hardest teams to play, where they almost feel like they've got nothing to lose, and that's where they rattled off some wins recently. So, more importantly, tied with Portland in the WCC standings, it's nice to get those wins and move up the ladder, and then Saturday will be a very tough game against one of the most efficient teams in the country in St. Mary's.
Yeah, very tough. We're going to look forward to that, and then come back home for home games, and that'll be fun. And I was thinking the other day, which is always a sad moment for me to start thinking about this, there's only five home games left, Jason. Where have things gone this year?
It's crazy how fast the year goes. And, you know, from a men's basketball perspective, it just seems like hopefully this last game was, you know, the team kind of getting to the point where they're reaching their potential, because I felt all year long it's an entertaining team, it's a fun team to watch, but the team can play better collectively and some guys individually, and that makes you feel, even though it's a 9-11 record, it makes you feel like, man, this team has a chance to do some stuff. And that was what's interesting about having members of that 1996 team back for the reunion. You know, the 1995 Pilots won 21 games and looked like they had a chance to go to the NCAA tournament, but were beaten by Gonzaga in the championship game. And, you know, they lost a couple key seniors and Ray Ross and Keenan Chapman. And the team came back and struggled a little bit during conference play, finished 7-7, but then went into the conference tournament with a lot of momentum and felt good about their chances and rattled off three straight wins to make the NCAA tournament. You know, talking with those guys, they said this team could do that. You know, they got the shooters, they've got a deep bench. They're very similar to what we had. You know, got some athletes and everything, and we kind of put it together at the right time, and it was at the end of the year. And if this current team can do the same thing, it could be a fun year.
Jason, to close the program tonight, a bunch of us loyal fans of yours, and you have many. We were all discussing. They listen to the program every week. We were behind the where we gather over there last week, and we were talking about the future a little bit. I know coaches play them one at a time, but we're talking about a couple years down the road. Now, has anything been determined on the Far West Classic? Number one, this is a question everybody had. And number two, what year is it again that Phil Knight's birthday party is coming to town? And has anything definitive been on that except the fact that it's going to be played at the Moda Center and the Coliseum? Is that correct?
Yeah, so the first part with the Far West Classic, you know, nothing has been contractually signed yet, but there is discussions, and that's the plan is to bring it back next year. We are committed to do it with Oregon State. It sounds like Oregon State is committed to doing it as well, so I think it'll be a similar format next year. The plan is to go out and try to get a BCS-level opponent that's a higher-name quality opponent that will play both teams, and then another team, you know, a low to mid-major team as well. So that's the plan. Nothing's been contractually signed yet, but that's the plan going forward, and I would anticipate, hopefully, we would get something locked down and be able to announce it sooner rather than later. So I would expect the Far West Classic to come back. It was a great showing, and a lot of people had a lot of great things to say about it. And so that's the working plan going forward. The Phil Knight Classic is 2 years away, so we're looking to around Thanksgiving of 2017. So not this coming year, but the following year. And you know, a majority of the teams have been committed, haven't changed. I believe Xavier had to drop out because of the Big East realignment, I think, is going to fill in for them. But otherwise, the brackets haven't been announced, but the participating teams have been announced. And it's really a who's who of college basketball. And those games are committed to be played at the Moda Center and Memorial Coliseum, 2 8-team bracketed tournaments with, you know, each conference, each of the top eight basketball conferences, for the most part, being represented with one team in each of the tournaments. So that's going to be, the greatest collection of basketball team tradition and talent ever put together in one tournament setting. And it will be a phenomenal opportunity for the city of Portland and the surrounding areas to see some of the highest quality college basketball that's ever been played in one collective area.
So will each team play 3 games in that then, Jason?
Yes, that will be – yeah, it'll be a bracketed with tournament where each team – my understanding, and don't quote me on this, but I believe it will be one of those 3 games tournaments, just like all those MTEs over the Thanksgiving holidays where, you know, next year we're going to the Wooden Legacy in Anaheim, and you're going to get 3 games no matter what. Winners move on to the winner's bracket, losers finish out through the loser's bracket.
So it is over Thanksgiving, definitely. So 2017, so good. We got caught up on that. Big win over BYU. Got to keep the momentum going. The women are home Thursday and Saturday. Don't forget the women's clinic, mother-daughter clinic. That's a fantastic idea. I love things like that on Saturday on the court after the game. And don't forget Jason Bro, if you see him out there. Tell him you like the job you're doing. Don't just tell me. Tell him. No, he's too busy. Just tell me. All right.
They can come and tell me. Always appreciative.
Good night, Jason, and have a great week, and I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
You betcha. That's Jason Bro, the Associate Athletic Director at University of Portland. Thanks for listening, everybody. From the bottom of my heart, we do appreciate it. The show has a big listenership. Let's keep it going. Don't know about it. And it's great. If you can't listen live, you can listen to the podcast at any time. Good night, everyone, and we'll see you on the bluff at the Child Center. And don't forget to make all your free throws.